I will call to order the Wednesday, March 7th, 2018 meeting of the Government Operations and Policy Committee. And our first order of business today is the approval of the minutes from our March 6th meeting. And Representative Sansa, have you had a chance to review the minutes from yesterday's meeting?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. I did, and I moved the minutes.
Representative Stanstead moves the minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion carries. Representative Schumacher, this is your lucky day. We'll have you come first since you are here and ready to go. I know it's always your lucky day to be able to appear before the Government Operations and Elections Committee.
Mr. Chair, if you were me, you would know how lucky you really are.
I'm sorry, we have to change the agenda if you take your seat again, Mr. Chair. Representative Schumacher, welcome to the committee. I will move House File 2902 before the committee to be re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. Chair Schumacher, welcome to the committee. If you will proceed with the explanation of your bill, the committee anxiously awaits.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for hearing this bill today. House Bill 2902 is in front of us, and all it's really doing is taking the Results First program that is managed by MMB right now and moves that to the newly created Legislative Budget Office. Results First is a Pew Charitable Trust and MacArthur Foundation program that takes national aggregate data and compiles it based on the programs that we utilize in the state to do cost-benefit analysis on the work that's done. And so it has been doing several different areas of state government to try and find where we get the most return on our investment for the services that we offer in the state. And I think that as we continue with the program and see the results that we have there, that it would be useful for the department that's going to be, or for the organization that's going to be doing the fiscal notes, to also have oversight through the program that we have here.
Representative Schumacher, thank you. I think we have a question from Representative Fenton out of the chute here this morning. Representative Fenton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Schumacher, would this move consolidate like the fiscal duties under the organization?
Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fenton. While it wouldn't directly consolidate, but it would streamline the process. And so as they're making calculations for what a fiscal note would really look like, they would have this information in their own warehouse for it.
Representative Fenton, follow-up.
Thank you.
Other member questions at this time on House File 2902, which is before the committee? If not, I don't have any testifiers, Representative Schumacher, that have checked in that wanted to, but I'm certainly open to taking testifiers if there's anyone. I see we have someone from the agency coming down to testify, and if there's anybody from the general public that would like to testify, make their way down, please. And as you're getting settled in, I want to draw your attention this morning, members. Seated behind me to my left are students from the Burnsville High School who are joining us today in committee. Welcome. And with that, Ms. Kelly, if you'd like to introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Margaret Kelly. I'm the State Budget Director with Minnesota Management and Budget. And first, if I may, Mr. Chair, just thank you for all the work you've done on the pension bills, and hopefully we'll see some success with that this session. But specifically to this bill here, I just want to say that I manage the team of folks at MMB who are the Results First team. I have the pleasure of working with Dr. Pete Bernardi, who is both a practitioner and a professor in research-based methodology, and has been doing that for quite a few years. And you have probably met some of you, Weston Merrick on his team, who has probably come to testify and provide you some of the information we have gleaned from our work so far. But we began our work back in 2015 when the legislature passed this bill. We think it's a great bill. We think it's a good thing having Results First here with the state of Minnesota. We are among the top three states for evidence-based policy making behind only the state of Washington, who has been doing this for a long, long time, and the state of Utah. And this was based on a report that the Pew MacArthur Results First Initiative released, and they cited our work using evidence-based practices and benefit cost analysis to inform our budgeting. More than 80% of state and local policymakers who responded to a recent survey said that results-first findings that we've produced are easy to use and accurate. And the current organizational structure has allowed our team to publish findings faster and in more public, more policy areas by leveraging executive branch resources, relationships, and philanthropic funding. So transferring the program would likely involve new staff needing to learn how to use the econometric models and to reestablish trust with state agencies and local partners who provide data and use the findings. Projects take 10 to 12 months of continuous work with agencies, counties, and providers. It would be difficult to maintain momentum if staff needed to redirect their attention to other priorities during a legislative session. I would encourage you, as you consider this, to reach out to Pew MacArthur to seek their advice and to further reach out to local partners as well to seek their advice in making this decision. Thanks.
Ms. Kelly, thank you for your testimony. Questions for the testifier members? Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Anyone else wishing to speak on the matter before the committee? House File 2902. Representative Schumacher, seeing none, we'll give you the final word today, sir.
Thank you for your support.
With that, I will renew my motion that House File 2902 be re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. Representative Schumacher, you are on your way, sir.
Thank you very much.
The next bill that we will be bringing before the committee is House File 2722. Representative Loon, I know Chair Loon was sorry, walking. There she is. Welcome, Chair Loon. We'll give you a chance to get settled in. We'll bring the bill before the committee in just a moment. Chair Loon, welcome to the committee. I will move House File 2722 to be re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. It is now before the committee. Representative Loon, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I am Representative Jennifer Loon. And House File 2722 came to me from a constituent actually a few years ago, and I've kind of been working on this concept and having a number of discussions with the Secretary of State about this constituent's concern. She is a small business owner. She's a sole practitioner. Her business address is her home, but she's a consultant and does not meet with clients at her home. She usually chooses a public spot in that because she is a single woman and that. And so she was concerned or raised concerns about the requirement when you register your business with the Secretary of State, their website publishes your business address, and that is her home. And she has had people who have seen her either advertisement for her business on website, have used the Secretary of State's website to get her address to show up at her home unannounced. And this is has been of concern to her. Again, as a single woman, it's a concern for her safety. She has not been the victim of stalking or harassment, to my knowledge, and I know we have separate provisions for that. But she has asked if there would be the ability to not have her business address, which is her home, published on the website. And so, again, I initiated discussions with the Secretary of State's office how we might be able to do this. And so that is basically the bill. It would allow for someone, because obviously if a person or a business wanted to had a complaint or file a suit against this business, they do need to be able to reach them, and any person would be able to obtain the information to mail to this business or to serve papers to a business by contacting the Secretary of State's office. So that information would still be available for people who need it. It just wouldn't be advertising someone's home address on the website. So there is an amendment I think you have. Again, this bill I actually introduced it last year, so The amendment today would just change the effective year to 2018 rather than 2017. And I would say I did receive some suggested amendments to the bill, tweaks from the Secretary of State's office earlier this week. That is being drafted, but I don't have that yet. So just so you know that we're continuing to make refinements to this bill and to the concept, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Representative Loon, for your bill presentation today. Members, in your packet is the A1 amendment that Chair Loon referred to get the bill in the form that she would like. I will move the A1 amendment to House File 2722. All those in favor of the A1 amendment to get the bill in the form that the author would like, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Chair Loon, the bill is now in the form that you would like. Members, questions of Chair Loon. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Loon, you mentioned a amendment or that you're getting drafted. What does that entail? Is that something, I guess the question I'm asking, is that something that we should be handling here in state government or government operations? Because that's where our purview. So what is this amendment you're talking about? I know we don't have it.
Yep, Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson. It's actually some additional changes that the Secretary of State's office brought to me, and I don't recall if it was yesterday or Monday. Today is Wednesday, correct, Mr. Chair? It's been that kind of week. And so I just haven't had a chance to get it drafted. We had a very brief conversation, I and the Chief of Staff with the Secretary of State's office about it. And if there's someone from the office who'd like to offer other comments on that, I would welcome that. It's more just been a time issue, frankly, Representative Nelson, in terms of getting this sorted out.
Representative Nelson, I did have that same question, so it's scary when you and I are on the same wavelength some days.
That's a scary thought.
I know. Let's not tell anyone, shall we? All right. And maybe we'll get some more insight on the amendment question. Good morning and welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, sir, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Bert Black. I'm the attorney for the Office of the Secretary of State. And Representative Loon is correct. We've been having conversations. The purpose of the amendment is to make the result of the intent of the amendment more comprehensively effective. Basically, we do not object to the policy that Representative Loon has expressed in the bill. There certainly are situations, and actually it doesn't even have to be a safety issue. It could be a zoning issue. There are a number of, if you have a home business, it may be a nuisance to your neighbors for people to drive up, whether it's solicited or unsolicited. It becomes a nuisance. Some of the home businesses, some cities say, well, you know, you can't have people parking up the block and such. So, I mean, there are a number of reasons why we don't object to the policy. However, there are, certainly the way the bill is right now, there are some costs. We're working to make those costs the minimum possible while effectuating the intent of the bill. So that's our situation. We continue to work with Representative Loon. And I guess I expect we'll be doing that as the bill goes along.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, the question I would have is there. What are we talking about tweaking? What parts are we talking about tweaking? What are we, because if it's going to reduce the cost, I know that's a fiscal issue, but if it's a policy issue that does that, we need to know. We need to have that idea here.
Right.
Well,
I can give you, Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson and members, I can give you a ballpark on that. We're looking at the bill as it is now addresses annual reports or annual renewals and the registered office address. It's actually less expensive if we make it more of a blanket situation where all the addresses upon request, but all the addresses of a particular organization are omitted from the web display. It, just as a matter of computing, it's easier to say yes or no to everything rather than trying to pick off different addresses and saying yes to this, no to this, yes to this, no to this. So that's one aspect of it, really, that reduces the cost quite a bit.
Representative Nelson, follow-up?
I don't know what, Mr. Chair, I don't know it's still a little confused, but I guess I think the more we talk, until we see the amendment, I guess I can't judge it, and we're not going to see the amendment here, it sounds like. And I have some concerns about that government operations are passing bills out that aren't fully vetted here as they should be, and passing them on and saying, well, we're going to amend it later on. And
sure.
I always have a concern about that.
Mr. Black, to help further provide clarification on there, how many of the issues that are addressed in the amendment are policy-related versus fiscal-related? Maybe that will help the committee get a better understanding.
Mr. Chair and members, the only policy issue really that's in the amendment that I've seen is that it expands the omission of the display of the addresses to all of the addresses of the requesting entity, whereas in the bill as it's presented to you, it's just the annual renewals and the registered office addresses, which to be sure are important classes, but it's not everything. So, for example, it doesn't include necessarily the addresses that you might provide in the initial filings for all of the business entity types. And that's if you really want to omit the addresses, that's an important source to include.
Representative Loon, did you want to comment on the discussion to help with the committee's backgrounding?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yes, to Representative Nelson's question, and I think to the committee, I mean, this is really just a matter of trying to, I think, work out a change, which the Secretary of State's office does not appear to be in opposition to, but just figuring out how to do it in the least fiscally cost way. And so that's my understanding of the amendment, and we're still trying to figure that out, what works best for the office and how they and their computer systems for the filings.
At this time, I'm going to go to member questions. I do have a number of members that are on the list, and the list is growing. Representative Halverson, followed by Tice, followed by Peterson, followed by Jessup, followed by Joachim. So with that, we'll start with Representative Halverson.
You've sparked a lot of people's curiosity. what was the referral, re-referral motion on this bill? Where is this going?
This is going to State Government Finance, Representative
okay.
Halverson.
That's very good. It sounds like there definitely is a fiscal cost, so I'm glad that we're going to hear more about that in State Gov Finance. My question in terms of expanding, it sounds like what the Secretary of State's office would like to do to make this simple is to eliminate addresses for all the businesses. Is that what I'm hearing? Or
Mr. Chair and Representative Halverson. No, not for all businesses, just for the ones that are requesting this. As you see in the bill, the bill is limited to a small category, those organizations that only have one shareholder, manager, member, or owner, and the business address is their home address. So that's a relatively small number of people, but certainly, you know, we recognize that they have a potentially legitimate issue.
Representative Halverson, follow-up.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I agree that this is an important issue, and I thank Representative Loon for bringing it up. I guess I was trying to get a better understanding of the policy change that the Secretary of State's office is requesting. In terms, you said that there's a way that's going to make it a little simpler and maybe a little less costly. Could you repeat what that is?
Mr.
Black.
Chair and Representative Halverson. The way our computer system is programmed, and we've had computing in business records for quite some time, but the way it's programmed, it simply is going to be a lot less work for our computer staff to accommodate the requirements of the bill if it really is for all the addresses of a requesting party, okay, all in terms of the web display. It's just easier to turn that switch on and off as opposed to trying to figure out specific addresses, because there are a number of different addresses that people provide along the way. It's just easier to say, to make a blanket change.
Representative Halverson, follow-up?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
The next member question comes from Representative Tice, followed by Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure if this is for Representative Luna or Mr. Black, but my husband and I have several businesses, and, of course, we office out of our house. So would this be something that we could do as well? Because I'm only seeing a natural person, but yet the companies are owned by both my husband and myself.
Representative Luna.
Mr. Chair, Representative Tice, it is... The bill is currently drafted as, I believe, a sole proprietor, a single person. I don't believe it would apply in your particular situation, although I would defer to counsel if they have a different interpretation of the bill.
Representative Tice, follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I would suggest that maybe we look at that as well, because my husband's in the field and I'm the one in the office when I'm home, which now is weekends, but that doesn't mean he's there. And my other question would be, instead of having the home address, are we allowed to use our post office box?
Mr. Black.
I don't remember.
Mr. Chair and Representative Tice, post office boxes are a little bit of a problem, particularly for the registered office, because the way that it works for business, your registered office is supposed to be the place where you can be contacted, mm-hmm. where your records can be inspected, should there be a request to do so. Now, of course, if you're sole shareholder, that's not as much of a problem, but mostly where you can be served with legal service of process. We actually did look into this last year, the question of post office boxes, and I can only tell you from the lawyers I talked to, I got an immediate and strong no. So there are some problems with the post office box.
Okay, thank you.
And Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Tice. Just to add to that, I mean, mm-hmm. I have looked at all range of this, and we've explored these ideas with the Secretary of State's office and kind of reached the same conclusion, because if you need to serve someone, it can't be to a post office box. It was suggested to me that some businesses with this concern, the way they get around it is they hire an attorney, and the attorney's office is the place. But again, for a small business, that can be a pretty substantial sum just to have some place for papers to be served. I'm trying to find a more economical solution to this concern, which I think is a legitimate one.
Thank you. I guess.
Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my bigger question is, instead of having our addresses out there on a website, could we have our P.O. box? But if somebody, I think that's where I'm going with that one. It's just, you know, would folks, if they wanted to contact me by letter or whatever, if that could happen. I didn't remember.
Mr. Black, Representative Price,
to follow up there, in both the bill as it's presented and the things we've been talking about, the address would be available if somebody made a specific request. Okay, it's still on the date. It's still in our database. It's simply not displayed. So if somebody needed to serve you, even though your address or get in touch with you for some other reasons, if they knew your business, okay, they're not just flipping through the website looking for random companies. If they can identify your company and they call us or email us or whatever, they would be able to get that information. It's still public information, so they would be able to locate you if they had a particular reason to do so.
Okay, thanks.
Representative Peterson, followed by Representative Jessup.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have a business that would be affected by this, which, you know, and several of the ones that wouldn't. But and so my understanding is, if you're just basically that one person, your address wouldn't be on the website, but there would be a contact information at the Secretary of State's office that they could contact you if they wanted it. And your feeling that this particular small group is how many people?
Mr. Chair and Representative Peterson, it's really rare. I couldn't even speculate how small it is. Obviously, we have at least one constituent who is looking at that.
Well, two, because really, I am.
Okay, two, or maybe three and four. But it's fairly. It is actually fairly small. I mean, it depends on how you feel about your address being out there.
Representative Pearson, follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, well, I don't, you know, it's really not a big deal. It's more about, I use that feature to find other businesses quite often, and so for me, I think it's really important that it remains with this sole shareholder, member, or owner, manager, and it doesn't extend beyond that because I do utilize that address quite often in the real estate field, so that's why I think it's important that if you do move forward, which I think is fine, that it remains in this small section. Thank you.
With that, Representative Jessup, followed by Representative Joaquin. Representative Jessup.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Loon, Mr. Black, good to see you again. I'm an owner of UPS stores. So we receive this request often. Where individuals are operating businesses out of their home, but they do not want the general public or potential customers to know that where their home address is. So, Representative Loon, I fully understand where your constituent is coming from, and this is really based upon a concern for safety. And I just want to echo what your constituent has said. I hear this concern often. Individuals and businesses will come into our stores. They will rent a mailbox at one of our stores. Our stores are a little bit different setup relative to a P.O. box in that a business or an individual can come in and they can rent a mailbox and it will have a street address. And what you think about an apartment building and then you've got an apartment number, well, it's kind of the same type of situation. We take the address of the store location, and then they get a box number that goes with it. It's an opportunity for them to essentially protect their personal lives, concern for their safety, and make sure that the address is some other address than their own residence. So I'm fully supportive of what your constituent is after here. I think it's very, very important when we think about individuals' safety and also the concern for the safety of whomever else is in that residence. But by all means, mailbox at a UPS store is a potential solution for these concerns as well.
Mr. Black.
Mr. Chair, I would simply note that the at least for, with respect to the registered office, it does that might or might not be the best fit because you do have to be able to make the service there, and I don't know how you feel about process servers showing up at your store.
We are now are to Representative Joaquin, followed by Representative Freiberg. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chairwoman Loon, I just want to thank you for bringing this bill forward. It sounds like it's a fix for a very small population, but an important one. And I just want to clarify so I understand. I don't sit on state government finance, so I won't get a chance to see the amendment, but I do trust our colleagues here that do to follow up with questions. But from my understanding, Mr. Burt, you're saying that Mr. Black, you're saying that for it would only be for this small group of folks that are sole proprietors, no employees, home address, for all the information for them that's on the internet, you would still have the address, and it would be upon request for someone to get that. So the only fix would be instead of somebody having to request it, it would just automatically be done, and that's the way you're getting around some of the costs, or I just want to try to understand the amendment.
Right.
Mr. Black.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Joaquin. No, it wouldn't be automatic. It would have to be requested.
Okay.
The entity would have to assert, and we don't address employees, but they would have to, presumably, I think you're intuitively right that most of these situations it's just one person, but they would have to assert that they have that they are the sole shareholder,
mm-hmm.
or whatever the ownership is for their particular business type, and that the business address is their home address. So they would have to assert that. If they did that, then we would omit in the suggestions we've made, we would omit all the addresses for that particular business entity. And it would be the business entity requesting that, even though it's, you know, when you have a one-person business, there's a little bit of a blurring of lines between the person and the business. But it would be the business entity formally that would be requesting that. And we would still have that information, and it would be available if somebody needed to contact you and they asked us what is the address of ABC Corporation, and we would tell them.
Representative, you can follow up.
Mr. Chair, so just so I'm clear and I understand, there are other places within your system where they have to put that address. You're saying once they make that request, then that address goes away in all those different areas, and that's where you're doing the cost savings with computing.
Mr. Blatt.
Mr. Chair and Representative Joachim, that's correct. It's just easier to do an all or none. We would still have the data. They still have to give us the data, but it's easier to do an all or none with respect to the display rather than trying to pick and choose particular types of addresses.
Representative Joachim.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. And I just want to re-echo, I think this is a good solution, and I would echo Representative Peterson's statement to keep it small to this just individual type of business. Thank you.
Representative Freiberg, followed by Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad I went after Representative Jessup because, I mean, to me it seems like a reason you would want to have a provision like this is because there might be people out there who have a safety concern, whether there's a domestic violence situation or what have you. But, you know, if that's the goal, though, I guess I'm just a little uncertain about the way the bill is written. You know, on line 2.20, it says that the Secretary of State must not publish on its website the address of a business, basically if it's a one-person business, let's just call it that for short. So it seems like it's a little over-inclusive because there might be, you know, owners of one-person businesses there might be many of them who don't have a concern about their address being published. So it's, you know, and if there's a cost concern, then it seems like maybe you want to keep this limited to the circumstance where there is a safety concern, and not just all one-person businesses. But at the same time, then, on line 2.25, it says the natural person's address shall be made available to the public upon request. So, I mean, in that sense, it seems like it's under-inclusive also, because if there is a safety concern, there is still a mechanism for a person who maybe shouldn't have that person's address to get that person's address. So, you know, I guess that's just a comment. I don't know if the bill author or Mr. Black have any comments about either of those issues.
Representative Freiberg, let's find out. Representative Loon.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg. And I think, you know, some of the things that you mentioned, I think, may be addressed in the amendment language or the draft that has been given to me by the Secretary of State's office. But, again, it would be the intention, my intention in the bill is for those sole proprietors or single, you know, one-person businesses, however you want to categorize them, operating out of their home at their request. It's not my intention to push this on all of those business entities, only those that would request it. And that's been the nature of our discussions or my discussions with the Secretary of State's office. With regards to the safety issue, I think there are there's a separate provision for people who have maybe subject to a restraining order or something.
Mr. Black.
Mr. Chair and Representative Freiberg, well, of course, that's the Safe at Home program, but that's a totally separate suggestion or area. But let me just suggest, an analogy. You know, the court system, there are a number of items of information that are public in the court system, but you can't get on the web. You have to actually go down to the courthouse to get it. And that's their way of balancing the issue of you want to make certain things public, but you don't want it to be totally broadcast. And this is actually analogous to that, I think. So, I mean, it's not the first time that kind of method has been approached or used in this kind of approach.
Representative Freiberg, follow-up? Mr. Black, I want to tell you that I appreciate your bringing up the Safe at Home program. This is not something that's a new advent. We have found other needs for similar types of reasons that for individual safety. Although it's on voting, it's still within the purview of the Secretary of State's office, and you do have experience in dealing with these sensitive issues.
Mr. Chair, yes, we do.
And with that, we are to Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess listening to the discussion going on, I got one concern has to do with that was raised and Representative Tice brought up. Are we going to open this up for more businesses and have more businesses lack of transparency of where they're operating? So I have a little bit of a concern there. The other concern I have has to do with we don't have the, we're discussing an amendment, we don't have language, and we're talking about it, and I guess because that's been thrown out there, we're kind of discussing something and we don't have the actual words of what it's going to do, and we can look at it. So, I mean, I have some concerns there about passing this on. Again, as I said earlier, we should be doing our work in this committee and not passing it on uncompleted work to give somebody else to let them fix it later on. So I have concern about that. But it sounds like we're all on the same page. I think we all agree that in the situation that we're talking about here, that there are legitimate reasons why, but I guess I still have concerns that we're not seeing the language, and I don't know what's going to happen, and what we'll see is the end product when this does hit the floor. So I don't think there's any members on my side of the aisle that serve on the State Government Finance Committee, so we're having the discussion here, and we won't see the bill again. So,
Representative Nelson, to that point, I do serve on State Government Finance, and I'm very keenly aware of the 30-plus minutes of discussion and where the group is. If that provides you and your members any comfort, that I will I don't want to use the words hold Representative Loon accountable, but that's in essence what happens, that our concerns that were raised here will be addressed at that point in the committee. The good news is it does have some more committee stops. It doesn't go right from this committee to the General Register, and I do have concerns when we do those kinds of things and try to do, as you amply point out, do committee work on the House floor. So I have a little bit more comfort level knowing that I'm going to be able to be there if you have comfort with that. And secondly, we do have some more committee stops before it does hit the House floor. And any member that does have any questions, concerns, I would suspect that Representative Loon would be willing to meet with them as well. And any member who has concerns also has the ability as a member to go to the committee and to testify with their concerns or share their thoughts as well. So there are still avenues for our members from this committee to continue to have input on the final product on that. With that, I do not have any other member questions. Is there anyone from the public here today that would like to testify on the matter before the committee, House File 2722, as amended? Anyone present who'd like to testify on House File 2722, as amended? Seeing none, Representative Loon, we will give you the final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you all for really good questions and comments. And just to reiterate what the chair stated, yes, I'm happy to speak with any members and work out any issues. The amendment language, again, was brought to me by the Secretary of State's office. It's not changes I'm seeking. It was more their suggestions for how we could accomplish the goal in the least costly way, because they will have to make an adjustment to their computer program. So we'll have to get a fiscal note as well for State Gov Finance to know what that would cost. So that is, I think, solely the remaining questionnaire, and that will be worked out at State Gov Finance. So with that, I would appreciate your support today for at least moving it to the committee to have that discussion.
Representative Loon, I renew my motion that House File 2722, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The motion prevails. Representative Loon, you are on your way.
Thank you very
much. You're welcome. The next bill that we have is House File 3077, Representative Metza. And as Representative Metza is making his way to the testifiers' table, I will move House File 3077 before the committee to be re-referred to the General Register. Representative Metza, welcome to the committee. The bill is before us, and we'll ask you to overview the bill for members. And I also see that there's an A1 amendment, which we'll take. Oh, Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, that's the A1 amendment is mine, and it was brought to my attention that doing this, that the way it's written, they were not adding any members. And so if we do this before, there's a different time frame from when these people are appointed to when the effective date would be without, because there's no effective date on the bill. August 1st, it would take effect, which means somebody would have to be kicked off the board to put somebody new on. So that's what my amendment does. It just adds an effective date that it's made effective January 1. So that's the time frame when the new people are appointed to this board. So I would like to move the A1 amendment.
Representative Metza, did you want to take the A1 amendment now, or do you want to set up the bill at this point, or is it a friendly amendment
It's a friendly amendment, Mr.
And you're okay with doing that before you overview the bill for members?
Correct.
Okay. Representative Nelson moves the A1 amendment to House File 3077. Any discussion on the A1 amendment? Hearing none, seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment to House File 3077 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The bill is in the form that the author wishes. Proceed, if you will, Representative Mensah, to overview the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Essentially, what this bill currently does is make sure that we have regional balance in our Duluth Port Authority. Our communities up on the range contribute quite a bit of the product that's moving through there and have had a voice for the last 32 years. The bill is in a position where it needs a little bit more work. As I've continued to work with the county board and how best to approach this, we are working on an additional amendment, and if I could have a little leeway to go into a few things that will hopefully be coming before the committee soon. Again, essentially what we've agreed on is that it would be better to add two additional members to the board moving forward, one from County Commissioner District 4, 6, or 7, which the county board would appoint, and one from the Range Association of Municipalities and Schools, which would be elected there, and then have a local control to enact at the county level. With it would be a new enactment date then at that point to give them roughly 60 days to review at the county, and once the county approved it, I'm talking with the president of the board, that would give them ample time to get it scheduled, have conversations, and then move forward in the appointments. And so there's a few meetings we have left to do, but the general intent is to make sure that the port has regional balance and input from the different stakeholders in northeastern Minnesota that use it.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think if I heard you right, you're proposing you have another amendment that going forward, and that sounds like something that we should take care of here.
And Representative Nelson, just to help with that, my intentions, and I've spoken with the bill author, I see this different than Representative Loons, because this is going to the General Register, and that is absolutely what you bring up as committee work should be done in committee, not on the House floor, and I've spoken with the bill author, and we are going to lay it over until we get that amendment, but we certainly can have a robust discussion on it.
That was my that was going to be my suggestion.
Yep, so, oh boy, again, don't tell anybody that we're thinking alike, Representative Nelson.
I think that's the second sign of the apocalypse.
Get out while you can, right? Representative Mensah.
Well, I guess I would just, if there's any specific questions on that, stand to answer any of those, and don't need to add any additional comment myself.
With that, we do have a question from Representative Freiberg, followed by Representative Mason. Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for bringing this forward. I don't know if this is an issue that will be addressed in a subsequent amendment, but I was just curious with the language here. It says at least, you know, one of the members has to be a St. Louis County Commissioner representing the Iron Range region. I mean, I certainly have a general sense of where the Iron Range begins and ends. Is that defined in statute somewhere, or is that something that has a clear definition for this?
Representative Mensah, very good question.
I'm proud of the many years that my senator has served in the legislature, and I think we all have a good idea of where the Iron Range is, but you're correct, and that's why I want to make it more specific to Commissioner Districts 4, 6, and 7.
Representative Freiberg, follow-up.
When you mentioned that about the amendment that we'll see in the future, like, is there a guarantee? I don't know if St. Louis County does it the same way, but I believe county commissioner districts are redistricted similarly to legislative seats. I think it's usually the county board that is in charge of setting its own district boundaries. I mean, I guess as you think about this moving forward, I mean, just to be consistent with the purposes of your bill, making sure that if using those district numbers is a sufficient way to identify the Iron Range region after a redistricting goes through, that might be something else to think about.
Representative Mensah, comment to Representative Freiberg's suggestion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Freiberg. We'd be happy to incorporate that suggestion.
Representative Freiberg?
Nope.
All right, Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I guess my comment or question has to do about the addition of that St. Louis County Commissioner as well. because already the St. Louis County Board can make the nominations. How many of the St. Louis County Commissioners would fall under the Iron Range designation?
Representative Mensa.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and Representative Mason, good question three.
Representative Mason.
And how many board members are there?
Representative Mensa.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Representative Mason, seven.
Representative Mason.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Representative Fenton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mensa, did you say that the Iron Range has not had representation on this Port Authority for over 30 years? Is that correct interpretation of what you said? Or
Representative Mensa.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. No, the reverse. We have had, up until the last appointment, the last 42 years, a member that was serving from the Iron Range on the County Commission Board, and that had just changed recently.
Thank you for the clarity. Thank you.
I have no other member questions at this time. Is there anyone from the public that would like to speak on the matter before the committee, House File 3077, as amended? Again, the bill will be laid over today until we can get language that is coming back. Since this is going to the General Register and there are no more committee stops, we feel from a good policy standpoint we want to keep this in committee, and the author has agreed to that as well. So anyone from the public that would like to testify? Seeing none, Representative Mensa, I'm going to lay the bill over, and we'll probably take that up first part of next week, make sure that you've got time to get the amendment drafted and work out all your details so that we don't have to delay the process for you one more time. So when you have a better understanding, work with staff, and we'll get that back on the agenda for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'll incorporate the suggestions and have it in better shape to move forward. I appreciate your time.
And with that, House File 3077 is laid over for future consideration. Our final bill today is by Representative Sandstead, and that is House File 3076. And with that, as a member of the committee, I will ask Representative Sandstead to move her own bill before the committee. And that is going to be going to the General Register as well. And with that, Representative Sandstead, if you want to move your bill, again, it's going to the General Register.
Good morning, and I would like to move my bill. Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you for this opportunity to present House File 3076. The bill that you have in front of you is a bill that looks at the statute governing.
Representative Sandstead, I just a procedure. If you just want to say, I move House File.
I move it.
Okay. Excuse me. Representative Sandstead moves that House File 3076 be recommended to be referred to the General Register. Now I'll go ahead and proceed.
Okay, we'll do this again. Thank you. The bill that you have in front of you is a bill that looks at the statute governing St. Louis County Civil Service Commission. Much of the current language is obsolete. This bill amends the current language, makes technical changes, and removes obsolete language. With me today, I have Jim Gottschild. Jim is the Director of Human Services for St. Louis County. He will briefly summarize the bill concerning civil service reform for St. Louis County and help with any questions that the committee may have. But before I turn the mic over, there's just a couple of comments that I want to share with you. Recently, there was an article in the Star Tribune regarding the need for civil service reform. Though it wasn't speaking specifically to this bill, nevertheless, these comments certainly help speak to the need for the legislation. Quote, skilled and dedicated government professionals are quickly retiring. State agencies and local governments have experienced frustration with how difficult it is to recruit, retain, and reward high-performing government officials. The problem described here can be traced to a very old and regimented civil service system that governs hiring, career progression, management of performance, and pay increases, along with other work-related issues. As Governing Magazine notes, quote, antiquated civil service laws and regulations inhibit the response to operational problems and contribute to a culture that inhibits employee performance, unquote. Members, House File 3076 aims to get at the heart of the problem, which Governing Magazine so aptly described. It will do so by modernizing the St. Louis County antiquated civil service law, bringing them into the 21st century. This is a good bill. All of the stakeholders have worked for a long time to get to this point, and they are supportive.
Thank you, Representative Sandstead. There's an A1 amendment, and Representative Sandstead, I understand that this is an author's amendment.
It is, and I'd like to move that amendment.
Representative Sandstead, I just have a piece of housekeeping that I need to take care of before that. For full disclosure, this amendment did not come in and meet our deadline. I have asked staff to visit with Representative Nelson, who is the DFL lead on this, if he is okay with us waiving the 24-hour deadline. As the chair, I am, but I do want to defer to the DFL lead to see if he is okay with waiving the deadline for this so we can take it up today as well.
Mr. Chair, this is a purely, it looks like, technical amendment. I think it has to do with local authorization for the bill can go into effect, and so I see no problem with this. It's not a substantive change of the bill.
Representative Sandstead, we'll waive the 24-hour rule, and if you want to proceed with your A1 amendment to House File 3076.
Thank you. This is a technical amendment. It just requires that the St. Louis County Board approves the changes in order to let new language become effective. And with that, I would move the amendment.
Representative Sandstead moves the A1 amendment to House File 3076. Representative Quam to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm a little bit confused about what the technical clarity of timely complete is. I'm used to normally effective dates that you know, reference day after a certain thing, etc. So is there, can staff help me understand timely complete?
Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Quam, the language is in the effective date is the recommended language by the revisor's office to give all the right clues to the county board about when they have to get the resolution approving this law filed with the Secretary of State's office. So there is a deadline. It's before the beginning of the next biennium that they have to file the certificate of local approval of this law for it to take effect. So saying timely complete, it's not an open-ended time in which they can file that that certificate.
Representative Quam, follow-up.
Just clarifying that then my understanding is that it must be completed by June, the end of June 2019? Or what is the, end of biennium? Is it the next biennium?
Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Quam, it's before the beginning of the next biennium, so before the January 2019 session begins, this certificate would have to be filed.
Representative Quam.
Okay, so it's not the budgetary biennium, it's the calendar biennium.
Ms. Dyson. All right, other discussion on the A1 amendment by members? Seeing none and hearing none, to get the bill in the shape that the author wishes. All those in favor of the A1 amendment to House File 3076 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The motion prevails. And Representative Sandstead, you do have a witness who would like to testify, so we'll take him at this time as well.
That would be great.
Thank you. Good morning and welcome. Just state your first and last name for the record and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Jim Gottschild. I'm the Director of Human Resources for St. Louis County. St. Louis County is the largest county east of the Mississippi River in the entire United States, and we're actually larger than three states in the U.S. We've operated under a civil service employment system since 1941. There are a total of five counties that have been stated or called out in Minnesota statutes as having a employment system that is unique to their county. In addition to St. Louis County, those include Hennepin County, Ramsey County, Dakota County, and Anoka County. Each has a statute specific to their employment system. Unlike those other counties, St. Louis County has had challenges in updating our employment system, largely because in the northeast part of Minnesota, we are very blue-collar, and if you don't have the support from your union representation, you're not going to have great success in modernizing your employment system. We have attempted to do this in the past 30 years at least two times, and I'm here to testify that this time we approached the process very differently. In your packets, you have a copy of a slide deck that I'll refer to. On the second slide is the goal of the county's new employment system, and that includes to recruit, develop, and retain the best possible current and future workforce. And we believe, it's our professional opinion, that in 2018, civil service employment systems just don't resonate with the current job seekers. Our goal is to try to modernize it, reduce some of the rigidity, make it easier to understand, and be able to compete for the best talent, not only in the public sector, but also in the private sector. On the next slide, we do have a list of the Labor Management Committee from St. Louis County that participated in the process. We started very early working on our 2018, this legislative priority. Back in May of 2017, we engaged exclusive representatives from each of our collective bargaining agreements. We broke up into work groups. We had each of the work groups. They were assigned various sections of the statute, came back together, made their recommendations to the larger committee. The committee operated under a consensus decision-making model, which means no proposed changes made it out of this Labor Management Committee that did not have 100% support of all participants, including the labor and the management side. Did the county management members get everything that they could have wished for in this new rewrite of the employment law? Of course we didn't. But we do have some significant changes that we think are going to be very helpful to us. They're going to make sense to our stakeholders, and we believe it's going to make us a better employer. The next slide kind of speaks to what was the lay of the land back in 1941 when our employment law was originally passed and signed into law. And you can see that Governor Harold Stassen signs our civil service law in 1941. Some points of reference include the average wages for the year, the cost of a new home that year, and the average cost of a new car. Certainly nowhere near the cost that they are today. And in 1941, United States Congress designated the fourth Thursday in November as Thanksgiving Day. That's how far back this goes. And, of course, in December in 1941, we all know that we were drawn into the Second World War. Very different social and economic times. You can imagine that when these types of laws are being brought forward, there is a purpose. There is a great deal of economic hardship. The unemployment lines, they ran down the front steps and around the corner, even in St. Louis County. And I can assure you that the last time that we had that many people coming to the Duluth Courthouse was in the late 70s during the Marjorie Caldwell murder trial that we tried after the Congdon murder in the Glenshee Mansion. Moving on to the next slide, 1942, our county board adopts the resolution to use this new law, so very similar, consistent with the amendment that was just discussed. We also appointed our first civil service commission members. And I did some additional research back in 1942 and 1943 to give some examples of state finances. And according to the U.S. Census Bureau, in the 1942-43 fiscal year, the second year of the biennium for that year, the total expenditures for the state of Minnesota reported as $236 million. In 2018, the St. Louis County budget is approximately $397 million. And, of course, the biennium budget for the state of Minnesota is going to be close to $40 billion. So, again, a very different set of economic and social times. On the next slide, we have our first civil service rules were adopted in 1944. Sunscreen was invented in the United States. And there's a picture of an early civil service exam for likely employees who operated equipment in St. Louis County. The assessment process over the years has been very rigid. Typically, civil service employment systems are very well known for their paper and pencil employment tests. And again, we just don't believe that these resonate with the current job seekers. And I think what we've learned over the years is sometimes some of our best employees have been some of the worst test takers. And hopefully having a less rigid employment system will move us in the right direction. And as we started going through the treasure trove of pictures, I just had a slide to share some more. You just never know what you come across. It really tells the story of the tools of the trade that our employees worked with back in the early 1940s and the mid-1940s. And when you think about that our employment law was also passed at this time, literally, our human resources department staff are still working with the tools of the trades that were created at the same time. And, of course, we'd never expect our employees to operate antiquated equipment. And you know, you just imagine with the snowfall that we had in the Twin Cities area, how long it would take to clear the roads and make it safe for public travel if we're still using the types of equipment and we're building our transportation infrastructure with these types of pieces of equipment. So getting to the ask, on the next slide, we generalize the themes of our proposed changes to the civil service employment law. First, we want to get rid of the 1941 transition language. There's really no need for that anymore. There's also obsolete provisions. There's redundant, unnecessary language. There's many examples of new employment laws that have come into effect that were never recognized over the years in our employment system. And so we want to make sure that we have the ability to do that. We want to make the language more simple, clear, easier to understand. And there are a number of substantive technical updates, and then I'd like to address those at this time. Moving to this next slide that's titled Substantive Updates, the first of which is the duration of probationary periods. We do have a mix of full-time employees and part-time employees. We have a total of 1,840 FTEs approved for St. Louis County. Some of those individuals, for example, if they work in environmental services departments, they might work at collection stations for recyclables and collecting garbage. Especially when you get up into the northern regions of the county, some of those sites might only be open a half day. And so we don't have everyone working a full-time position. Our probationary periods have adjusted in our civil service rules, but we never reflected that in the statute. So we want to make sure that we recognize that the equivalent of a six-month probationary period might be 1,000 hours. And so that's the reference for the full-time equivalency for 6 months for a minimum, 12 months for a maximum, but not to extend beyond 24 calendar months. The next was a recommendation from one of our labor representatives on the committee who works in a safety-sensitive law enforcement-type position. Over the years, they've seen new cadets who, for whatever reason, were not able to work for a duration, might have been related to an injury, and they felt it was reasonable to extend their probation period to allow for the full training. Typically, it's a 12-month mandatory onboard or field training for those individuals. And also, there's positions that have cyclical-type work. It might be in the assessor's office. They might be doing appraisals during one part of the year. They might be doing tax courts during a different part of the year. So they want to make sure that they have the opportunity to evaluate people doing all of the work that's expected. So that's where that suggestion comes from. We did make a couple of changes to our unclassified service. Today, it includes all county department heads. But over the years, we've recognized it's very difficult to source and onboard talent at the deputy director level when you don't have the ability to offer them a starting salary that might be outside of the norm for the collective bargaining agreements where our deputy directors are today. They're an organized labor group. We don't have the ability to start them at a paid leave level that's more than the typical entry level for 0 years of service. So by moving the deputy directors into the unclassified service, we can bring them into the management compensation plan, and we can be more competitive to ensure that we're bringing in great talent at this second level of the departments. Also, we've extended the duration for individuals who once worked for the county. They resign under good standing. They want to come back. The current law allows them to do that for up to 12 months. We want to be able to give them 24 months to request reemployment because there are some great employees out there, and sometimes it takes a little bit more than just a year to determine that that may have not been the greatest career move. I want to come back to the county. There was an exchange that we worked with our labor groups that we would consider these people at the same time as people off of a promotional list or an open list. So they don't automatically get the first opportunity at a position. They do have to compete, and everyone thought that was a fair compromise. Moving on to the next slide, transfers. Today, individuals can transfer from one department to another department within the same job class, but they have to have permanent status. In some of our departments, for example, Public Works, and we hire operators who might live in Duluth, and they may be hired for a Public Works garage in Floodwood, or they might live in Virginia and they have to drive to Hibbing. Sometimes we have employees who are passing each other on the highways just because of where they were hired for. So we want to give these departments the ability to hire people and transfer them as long as it's within the same department, and they're typically going to be working under maybe not the same supervisor but the same superintendent. So we agreed that that would be in the best interest of the county to allow those types of transfers. The next two bullets, this is probably the meatiest of the proposed changes. For promotional vacancies, today we refer the top three people. For open vacancies, we refer the top seven people. We are moving to a proposal to move to the people who are associated with the top three scores. So you might have more than three individuals to interview. You might have more, and actually we are opening it up to the top 20 scores on the open. And the only requirement that we have for our hiring authorities on the open basis, you're going to get the associated names with the top 20 scores, you have to interview at least 10. And we would still make sure that we're doing expanded certification, so we're interviewing individuals of protected classes who are underrepresented in those jobs. And the last is temporary appointments. Today it's 4 months. We're proposing up to 6 months. I'd like to note that most of our collective bargaining agreements, if not all, have a limitation of 3 calendar months on temporary appointments. So we would also have to negotiate the duration to be extended beyond that time period. But at least this gives us the ability to do so. An example that we have today is as we're working with our auditor's office as we gear up for the elections for the end of the year, we do have a need to bring in people on a limited duration basis to help with getting people signed up for elections, processing election results. But it's not a permanent position. And we've actually had some success. We just want to make sure that's reflected in our statute. And that summarizes the substantive changes, and I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Gottsched. I do not have any member questions at this time. I will just double-check. Members' questions for either the bill author or the testifier? Seeing none, we'll go to public testimony at this time. If there's anyone who'd like to speak on the bill that's before the committee, House File 3076, anyone wishing to speak from the public on House File 3076? Seeing none and hearing none, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think there's a technical change on line 3.14. At the very end, it says head of the county civil service, and I was wondering if you wanted to change that to human resources.
Representative Peterson, if you could, as members are grabbing the bill, cite your reference again, if you would.
Well, they seem to be changing all of the civil service to human resources, and it would just be consistency in the bill.
Representative Sandstedt, to Representative Peterson's question.
Could you, thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you clarify again? You said line 3.14.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And your question again is? Because it does change it there to human resources.
The first civil services is crossed out. But
correct.
Then at the end of the sentence, it says County Civil Service Commission, and you know, goes on to line 3.15, and I was just assuming if you wanted to strike the second civil service and insert human resources.
Thank you. To Representative Peterson,
Representative
Mr. Chair. No, we do not. We still have a civil service commission.
So Representative Stansted, if I understand Representative Peterson's question, your clarification, we're changing from the civil service director, where that's an update in naming that position for the individual, like Mr. Gottsched, versus the commission itself is still called the Civil Service Commission.
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Very good. Representative Peterson, okay. Other questions? And there was no public testimony. Representative Sandstedt, we will give you the final word. Mr. Gottsched, thank you for coming down to the southern part. We hope you enjoy the weather from this part of the country. We always give our out-of-town guests that opportunity.
Mr. Chair, you got more snow this week than we did, so.
There you go. There you go. And with that, Representative Stansted, we will give you the final word before we take action on the bill today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you again for the opportunity, and I'd appreciate your support.
Representative Stansted renews her motion that House File 3076, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The motion prevails. With that, members, we are adjourned.